Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Color Podcast for the second day of December 2019. It's a Monday, the dreaded Monday, but this is a month that's like filled with holidays, so December really barely seems like a real month when you get down to it. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening, sharing, spreading the word, telling a friend, all that good stuff. We only grow because of you, and I appreciate the hell out of that. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of little stories going on, and then impeachment is scheduled to get picking back up this week, and all the other news that is fit to print and fit to talk about and fit to complain about and fit to point out the absurdity of, and we'll cover all of it as we go forward. I have hope you had a good Thanksgiving. I had a good Thanksgiving. Lots of turkey. I also had a honey-baked ham. Oof. It's a special occasion ham, but if you get a chance to get a honey-baked ham, get a honey-baked ham. Ooh, delicious. Anyway, like I said, lots of things going on. My family was in town. My wife's family was in town, so it was like ten straight days with somebody in town. They're still in town right now. They're leaving tomorrow morning. So, it's been great because it's amazing how much you can get done when somebody is like eager to play with the kids. You're like, oh, I can go downstairs and get stuff done, write a column like an hour. Like, this is awesome. And you just accomplish so much. But I wouldn't trade the kids for anything less than $1 million. If you got a million, no, I can't say. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't. I'd loan them out, rent, you know, a lease with an option to buy, something like that. Just mostly kidding. But like I said, it was a great Thanksgiving. You do get a little tired of turkey on like Saturday afternoon. Ooh, and I've lived in the D.C. area since 2001, so whatever that is, 18 years. And I finally did something. My dad, my sister, brother-in-law, and one of her kids and her boyfriend came out. And we went, took everybody to the there's the National Air and Space Museum down in the mall. If you ever go to the Smithsonian, it's down there, and they got cool stuff. Don't get me wrong, they got really cool stuff down on the mall in Washington, D.C. But out by Dulles Airport, there's another facility, a giant facility that has a Concorde, and it has some kind of stealthy type plane, and it has, most importantly, a space shuttle, which is really super cool. So for the first time ever, because I've done all the Smithsonian's 1,000 times, it's got to be like somebody living in Anaheim and Disneyland. Like, everybody comes out, wants to go to Disneyland, so you end up going there 30 times a year. Well, this thing out by Dulles, completely different. We drove out there, and it was awesome to see a space shuttle up close. And you think, they went up in space in this thing. And it's weird. It's got, it's not a smooth surface at all. The white area is not smooth. It's almost like, I wish you could touch it, but you can't. It is almost like muslin or something. I don't know what the hell it's made out of. It seems weird. And the heat shield on the bottom is thousands upon thousands of small, maybe 3-inch by 3-inch squares with what looks like a rivet in the middle of it, smoothed out. But, you know, I don't know. It just looks really different up close than it does on TV. It's huge. It's big. It was awesome to see. And you could walk underneath it, sort of, parts of it. Very cool. But if you ever get a chance, go out to the Dulles Air and Space Museum, the Uber Hazy, something. I don't know. If you just National Air and Space Museum, Dulles Airport, and you get to see some really cool stuff up close, including the Enola Gay, which is the bomb that dropped, or the plane that dropped the bomb on Hiroshima. It was really cool to see that. And it was a giant plane, and the cockpit was tiny. You see these movies. I watched Memphis Belle. I've seen that movie, Memphis Belle. And I've seen the movie Enola Gay. And it seems like there's a lot more room inside the plane in the movies than there is, because they got to get a camera crew in there. They got to be able to move around and do blocking and everything. So the real deal is much more cramped. Very, very cool. So if you ever get a chance, it's free to get into, just like all the other Smithsonians. But you got to take a toll, at least from where I live, you got to take a toll road to get there. And while it's free to get in, it's $15 to park. I don't really think it's costing that. I think they own the lot too, but I think they saw a revenue stream. Still, it's worth $15 because you load up two carloads of people, and even at $10 a head, you're coming out way ahead. So go do that if you get a chance. All right, that's enough about my Thanksgiving. Oh, yes, and again, I mentioned ahead of time that I apologized for the Detroit Lions before the Thanksgiving game, did I not? And now, you know, you see why. If you watch that game, you see why. Good Lord, what a joke. Anyway, on with the show, shall we? And let's change your life with Life Change Tea, our sponsor, our wonderful sponsor, Life Change Tea. It is a game changer. Look, you need to keep regular. You need to get that filth out of your body. And it, even if you go, well, hey, every day, I don't have a problem with that. There's still stuff coating inside of you that you should use something like Life Change Tea. It's a gentle daily cleanse. It rinses you out. It gets the stuff that nature leaves behind. And it's all natural in and of itself. So it's a double whammy. It's good stuff. And it gets you more energy. Your body is able to absorb more of the nutrients from the food that you eat. Once you clean it out and you've got more of your intestines and your digestive tract exposed, then it can get to work and give you the energy that you need. You won't feel so run down anymore. Gets rid of all that crap sitting in you. Just go to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Enter promo code Derek at checkout. You get 10% off your order. Now, some of you have been emailing and say, hey, I didn't get the discount. I didn't get this. I didn't get that. We're working on it. We are working on that. We'll get you taken care of. Don't worry about it. The most important thing is that you go to getthetea.com and get some Life Change Tea and check it out. Get regular. It's the tea that makes you go. Use as directed. Don't abuse it. Use it. Feel better, get the energy. You'll thank me for it. Send me those thank you emails for all of that good stuff. Okay, let's talk about the terror. You know, I feel bad because I'm sitting there and looking at the news and like, what do you start with? What do I go with? Where do I go? And you got to kind of talk about the terror attack in London. And it's like, it's right after Thanksgiving, but it's a Monday and it's the news. It is news because this is a colossal F up. In every possible way. And we're seeing what happened over there start to happen here. And if we don't become aware of it, these liberals will bring this stupidity here. I always say that stupidity spreads like a cold on a plane. And it really, really does. One liberal group in San Francisco or London or Paris or wherever, they get an idea and they implement this. And then some other progressive politician around the world goes, well, I don't want to be, that's a good idea. I don't want to be behind the curve on this one. We've got to go and be a part of this too. Let's follow suit and do what they did. And they don't ever bother to look at the results. They congratulate themselves on the action. And that's all they care about. Oh, we're so progressive. We're so progressive. Well, their progressiveness over in London cost two people their lives. Five people were stabbed. Two of them died. Many of them were former Cambridge University students. Just want to read this story. Where is it? It is from the UK Daily Mail, or the Sun, sorry. And this is, again, think about this. Every time you hear a Democrat running for president or a Democrat just sitting around talking about we need criminal justice reform, we have prison overcrowd, we have too many people in prison, it's mass incarceration, they say mass incarceration. They never bother to talk about the mass law breaking that put these people in prison, right? They know the law, they broke the law, they end up in prison. It's not society's fault. It's not anybody else's fault except for the people who willingly broke the law and knowingly broke the law. But they all say, well, we can't keep people in prison for so long. We need to rehabilitate them. We need this. We need that. Well, some people aren't worth rehabilitating. And quite frankly, the prison system is called the penal system for a reason, because it's supposed to penalize people for breaking the law. The left wants to make it into something else, like a reward system, like a vocational training, like job training. And for, you know, low-risk criminals, I get that. If you, I don't know, having a bunch of unpaid parking tickets, and you're not, you hadn't paid them, and you're going to prison for 60 days. You know what? Teaching them something while they're in there, aside from the lesson that they should pay their parking tickets or maybe feed the meter, that's fine. For other crimes, more serious crimes, I don't want to pay for their trip to law school. I don't want to pay for their gender transition surgery. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to have anything to do with these people. I want them to be punished. I don't really want them to see the light of day either. The UK Sun has this story. Usman Khan, 28, from Staffordshire, was released from prison in December last year on condition that he obey 20 strict conditions, which included not visiting the capital. Now, can you imagine? Why would you let somebody out of prison on condition that they not go to London? What? You're obviously, you think, well, if he goes to London, something bad's going to happen, right? So let's keep that in the country? That's your plan? That's your policy? But the killer hoodwinked authorities by traveling to the Prisoner Rehabilitation Conference at Fishmongers Hall, where he launched in his horror rampage on Friday. Now, isn't that lovely? Isn't that lovely? He hoodwinked. They gave him a day pass. Part of his condition for release, and he should not have been released, part of his condition for release was that he not go to London. But there was a prisoners' rehabilitation conference in London, so they said, oh, okay, go ahead. Now you think, okay, well, was he in there for parking tickets, Derek? Was he in there for something else? Well, let's read on, shall we? Khan fatally stabbed Jack Merritt, a 25-year-old course coordinator, and a woman before heroic members of the public wrestled him to the ground and an armed police officer shot him dead. Good. The attack has prompted questions on why Khan, a convicted terrorist, so this again, I don't think that you can be considered a terrorist by not paying parking tickets, a convicted terrorist had been released before the end of his original sentence. Now listen to this. Khan was jailed in 2012 for his involvements in plans to blow up the London Stock Exchange, then Mayor Boris Johnson's home, and the U.S. Embassy. But when the Court of Appeal passed an extended sentence on Khan, he was given a 16-year custodial term and a 5-year extended license. He's given 16 years in prison, and then on top of that, 5 years and sort of supervised parole after that. Well, laws around extended sentences repeatedly change. Now, for committing an act of terror or plotting to commit an act of terror, somehow 16 years is considered an extended sentence. Too long in liberal code speak. But at the time of his sentencing, prisoners serving extended sentences were released automatically halfway through their custodial terms, which in this case was after 8 years. Now, isn't that lovely? You're sentenced to 20 years, so I'll do 10. You know that going in. Has no seemingly consideration for the severity of the crime or even the behavior of the prisoner while in custody. Nothing. It's just, we're going to sentence you to 20, you do 10. We're going to sentence you to 16, you do 8. We're going to sentence you to 10, you do 5. Why not just sentence them to the original things? How about that? Or sentence him to 50 and let him do 25. Sentence him to 175 and let him rot in the ground in prison. Under the terms of release, Khan was required to wear a tag, have his movements monitored, and attend therapy sessions. Sorry, choking on the words. The Sun on Sunday can also reveal that Khan was given special permission to attend the Cambridge University-run event. Special permission. You are being punished. You plotted to murder a whole bunch of people. Okay, you want to go to a conference, though. Oh, well, all right. I didn't know you wanted to go to a conference in London. Part of the condition of your release is that you stay out of London forever and that you just, you know, murder people in the suburbs. But since you want to go to London for a conference, well, that's totally different. Come right in. It's so damn pathetic. This is how the left thinks. They don't look at the criminal justice system as punishment. They don't even consider the victims or the potential victims of the severity of the crime. They look at the person who committed them that ends up in prison, and they think that person should not be in there. You're violating that person's rights. Well, this person violated five people's rights not to be stabbed and two of their rights to continue to live. It's over. Khan has shown signs of radicalization prior to his 2020 arrest. Again, this is London. This is liberals in the UK. In chilling footage from 2008, he told a BBC reporter, "I ain't no terrorist," after anti-terror cops raided his home. So he's been on the radar for quite a while. A former classmate who has told us how he saw him preaching with ISIS flags on the streets after the lonely teenager was had finished Haywood High School in Stoke. It also emerged that Khan was a student of hate preacher Amjan Chatterjee, before he was locked up in his bomb plot. Now, Chatterjee's been a well-known radical Muslim in the UK. He's been radicalizing people. He's got a long list of bloody smear body count behind him. And I think he's in prison right now. But why is he still in the country? Why would you keep these people in the country? This is part of what the Brexit vote is over. This is a big part of what the Brexit vote is over. Unfettered immigration dictated by Brussels to countries all throughout Europe who say, well, we don't want to take in a whole bunch of Middle Eastern refugees that are unvetted and no way to vet them. We don't know if they're ISIS. We don't know anything about them. We don't want them in our country. And Brussels, because they supersede their national governments, say, well, that's sweet. That's nice that you don't want them. Tough. You're going to take them. You have to take them or you will be hit economically. You will be punished economically in your trade with the rest of the European Union. And that's why the people went to the vote, to the polls a couple years ago now. It's a shame that it's taking this long. They said, we want out of the European Union. We don't want our laws dictated by people who do not live here. Go chase yourself. Get bent. We want out. And the liberal politicians, and sadly some of what passes for conservative politicians over in the UK, were aghast. They like the power. They like government having power, even if it's not their government. They want control over people's lives because they believe that they know what's better for everybody else. I have some audio of Michael Bloomberg coming up that is going to probably disgust you. I would say shock you, but at this point, I can't imagine it actually shocking anybody. We've seen so much come out of the Democrats, but it'll disgust you from a conceptual standpoint. But over in the UK, it's the same thing. These politicians, both the so-called conservatives and the so-called liberals, they don't mind that Brussels has a say over them. A lot of the things that Brussels is imposing through the European Union on the UK are things that they want to impose on the UK themselves, but they realize that the voters would throw them out on their asses if they did it. So they say, well, you know, we'll just let Brussels do it. And then we'll get to govern it. We'll get to supervise it. We'll get to implement it. It's okay. We have to do this because Brussels says we have to do it, not because I support it when they really, in fact, do. Well, there's another election coming up in the UK next month. Well, this month now, just in a couple of weeks, that will determine whether or not the UK will ever leave the European Union and how. I don't care how. If I'm over there and they voted for it, you know, the people who chant, this is what democracy looks like. How about you just do what the voters wanted? You put it to the voters. The voters said, get out. And now you're sitting there finding a way not to get out. NBC News is framing the story this way because liberals here hate Brexit too. Their headline, London Bridge Attack Threatens to Recast UK's Brexit Election with Focus on Terror. Ooh, it threatens to do that. Maybe that's because that's what it's about. A deadly terror attack struck at the heart of the British capital just weeks before a crucial national election, refocusing the campaign on security issues as voters were set to head to the polls. That was 2017. Now, 2 years later, London Bridge was again the scene of a tragedy and bravery this weekend, and the center of national debate in the UK. Which way will they go? Will they go for the open borders crowd? Will they say, hey, you know what? We want more people like this. We need all the Muslims you can possibly get. Or will they say, you know what? We can't do that. See, there is a rationale. It's not a very good one, but there is a rationale for the leftists in the world to call, even in this country, to call for open borders, to push for open borders, to push for unfettered immigration. And that is because the citizens of the countries, even here in the United States, aren't having enough kids. We aren't replacing ourselves. Now, I've done my duty. I've replaced myself. My wife and I have replaced ourselves. We have two kids. But there are far too many people who are waiting far too long in life to start having kids that they can't really have more than one or two, or they can't have any by the time they actually get married, if they ever do get married. So what you need is more people coming up into the workforce than you have in the retirement force, because our entire system of social safety nets is built on a Ponzi scheme. It's a big pyramid. And when Social Security first started, there was something like 12 people somewhere, and there's a lot of people working per Social Security recipient. Right now, we're about 3 people working per Social Security recipient. Soon that will be 2-to-1, and eventually 1-to-1 if we do not start having more kids and they eventually enter the workforce. So liberals say, well, we got to import more people. We've got to import more people. Well, we're not importing high-skilled labor. We're actually importing a whole bunch of people with no skills and no language skills to compete for jobs that are sort of dying in this country. The manufacturing jobs, the manual labor jobs. And by the way, our horrible education system happens to churn out quite a few people who are not qualified for much more than those jobs in the first place. So we're importing competition for American low-skilled workers. And well, you know what? Americans don't want to work for minimum wage, whereas illegals or even legals will. So they win. So it is essentially a policy of our politicians favoring people in this country illegally or even legally over American citizens. It's a complete and total mess. Now, it's partially being done under the guise of we need to have more workers here so that we can continue to grow our economy and pay for our social safety nets. They're staving off disaster. But make no mistake about it, you cannot stave off the massive disaster that we have coming in Social Security and Medicare. I'm not going to get into it, but we're talking about $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities between the two over the next 75 years. That kind of money is unimaginable, and there's nowhere to get it from. They're just trying to kick the can far enough down the road so that when the feces hits the fan, the politicians who are in office now and refusing to do anything about it will be long since dead and or at least retired, and they won't get the blame. Politics is a game of hot potato. They don't want to be caught with it when it blows up. But make no mistake about it, it is ticking. It's clearly a bomb. They know that something is wrong and something needs to be done. And they're not willing to do it. They'd much rather open up the borders. Now, for Democrats, there's an added bonus. It is they get a whole bunch of future voters for them. For Republicans who are beholden to their big donors, there's a bonus to them, too. They get more donations because their big donors want to keep wages artificially low because, well, they like paying people less. And in the middle, getting screwed from both sides, getting crushed, is the American public, the American people, not wealthy enough to have the ear or the interests of either one of those political parties. And we just get screwed. We just keep getting screwed and screwed and screwed. And really, people, it'll collapse. Not, well, might collapse in my lifetime, but it probably won't collapse in my lifetime. In my kids' lifetime, it will likely collapse, which is why I want to find some sort of escape plan. We need an escape hatch. We need to form a new country someplace or take over a small country somewhere else in the world and really introduce the concept of freedom and a strong national defense in their politics, through their politicians, and start over. We're losing here. And it's not just because Democrats are terrible. In the long run, Republicans are terrible, too. At least Republicans pay lip service to the concept of reforming entitlements. Democrats say there's no problem whatsoever, and why would anybody ever want to do that? Remember that? Back in, was it 2005, I think it was? 2004, 2005. George W. Bush proposed a simple tweak to Social Security. It was really just a tweak where you, if you wanted to, completely voluntary, if you wanted to, you could take 3% of what you put into Social Security every year. 3%, which ain't a whole lot. You could take that 3% and put it in the stock market if you wanted to, or put it in some other kind of investment. You couldn't spend it. You couldn't put it up your nose if you're Hunter Biden. Nothing like that. You couldn't spend it on strippers, again, if you're Hunter Biden. But you could invest it in a lot of different options. And if you died before you reached 65, that money would be inheritable, that 3%, not the rest of it, but the 3%. So you could give your kids something. That is a big boon, actually, to the black community that the Democrats claim to care so much about, since black men die, you know, their life expectancy is lower. Now, a lot of that has to do with the murder rate in inner cities amongst teenagers and 20-year-olds, but the life expectancy past 65 is slightly lower for black men than it is for white men, not by dramatic amounts, but you could inherit, you could give that money. You would actually have something to pass on to your children. That would have been huge for everybody, because we all know somebody who's died before they've reached the age to collect Social Security. And they've paid into Social Security all their lives. And I'll tell you a little secret. Your government, our government, loves it when somebody dies before they turn old enough to collect Social Security. You know why? Because they will have worked their whole lives and paid into the Social Security system, and they will not have collected anything. Boom, you get a small death benefit to your family, and that's it. The rest of the money is just poofed up in smoke, absorbed by the government. Now, realistically, they've already spent that money, but you get the concept. George W. Bush's plan would have allowed people to invest 3% and pass that on to their children. Democrats at the time said, well, there is, I remember Michael Moore talking about this on Real Time, I think, with Bill Maher or something. He was definitely involved in this, insisting there is no crisis. There is no crisis in Social Security. There's no reason to address or change Social Security or introduce this investment scheme, this scheme to benefit the rich. I'm not really sure how it benefited the rich, but that's what they were saying. They were insisting that there was no crisis in Social Security and there was no reason to deal with it or to mess with it. So Democrats blocked it. Well, imagine what you could have done with the stock market if you had had money to invest in the stock market explicitly. You couldn't spend it on anything else. That you could have thrown 3% of your Social Security money in the stock market back in 2005, back when, what, the stock market was about half that it is now? Think the return you would have gotten on the money you put in there even after the Great Recession in 2008 would be greater than the negligible, almost negative interest that you get now on your Social Security money, which is all spent, by the way? Of course it would. Of course it would. But the left didn't want you to do that. They want the control. That's what it's all about. Imagine if you'd bought Apple stock back in 2005. Imagine how that would have worked out. The iPhone, I don't think, was out yet in 2005. The iPad hadn't been invented yet in 2005. Apple was, you know, very successful with the iPod, but they've grown exponentially. If you had had a small piece of that, imagine what your money would have done. Imagine what you would have in retirement. Imagine what you could give to your children. Democrats blocked that because it was too risky. There is no crisis because they know better than you. The whole thing, everything, is a total and complete scam, and these politicians are lying to you. They care more about their own power than they care about anything else, whether it's in the UK with Brexit or it's in the United States with Social Security, Medicare, illegal immigration, whatever. The left will dictate terms to you, and you have no choice but to accept them, or they will ignore you or destroy you. Along those lines, I want to play now the Bloomberg audio that I alluded to. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York, former Republican, former independent, now current Democrat. He's just all over the place. He'll go, he's like water. He flows to wherever he can find the easiest path. And he seems incredibly arrogant. The politicians, you have to have a certain amount of arrogance to be a politician. You just do. That's the way of the world. But to want to be president of the United States, my dad today, yesterday, was talking about the Democrats running for president, all of them. He's never going to vote for any of them. He's going to vote for the president again. But he says none of these people actually, all they want to do is, they're only running because they want to beat Trump. That's it. That's their whole argument. We can't have Trump anymore. Vote for me. Joe Biden's gotten into the race. He said, well, I'll get into the race if I think I'm the only one who can beat Trump. Bloomberg, the same way. Well, he doesn't think that Biden can beat Trump, so he's going to run for president because he thinks he can beat Trump. But beat him on what? Beat him how? Beat him why? There really is no why rationale for these Democrats running for president. If you think about it, if you sit down and listen to them, they don't have as much a vision for the country as much as they have a vendetta against Donald Trump. They don't think he should be president. They want to make sure he's no longer president. They want to beat him. But to do what? Well, then they get into trouble because I don't think these people really believe in all that much. They just think that Donald Trump is vulnerable. So if they better go now. They better run this year because this is the year that they think that the Republicans have a weak nominee. Well, that's not much of a rationale for president of the United States, if you ask me. So my dad is absolutely right on that. They're just anti-Trump. They're not for anything. They're not in support of all that much. They're throwing out liberal ideas left and right. But the core principles to why they're running for president has to do with, well, Donald Trump is terrible. I don't like Donald Trump. We have to defeat Donald Trump. Bloomberg's rationale is the same way. And Bloomberg is perhaps the ultimate opportunist. In politics, opportunism is the coin of the realm. People pounce when they can, and you hear, well, this person waited too long to do this, or they came too early, they're too early in this, they're not ready enough, they're not ripe enough, whatever. Bloomberg has so much money that it doesn't really matter. And what he did when he was mayor of New York was try to dictate the terms by which everybody lived their lives. The small pieces, the little pieces. You want to control the little pieces, then you control the whole. That's how it works. Very rarely do politicians start off, we want to control the big thing. They want to start controlling little things and get you used to the concept of government control. And then they come in with bigger ones and they move bigger. They start small to big. And they gain a lot of control, a lot of power that way. Bloomberg is no different. He wanted to tax everything. He wanted to regulate everything. Straws, styrofoam, large sugary drinks, as he liked to say. It didn't matter what it was. He wanted control over it because Michael Bloomberg thinks he knows better than everybody else how they should live their lives. Now, there are a lot of people out there he probably does know better than how they should live their lives. But there are a vast majority of American people who know better how to live their lives because Michael Bloomberg, sitting in his ivory tower on his $50 billion of net worth, really has no idea what it's like to not be Michael Bloomberg, to not be worth $50 billion, to not be anywhere on the earth and go, I can buy everything here without missing a beat. He's going to spend $100 million on his campaign, and his net worth will not decrease at all. That's just how it works when you get that much money. Serious things have to go wrong, and spending, you know, 1% or 2% or 0.5% or whatever the hell the math works out to of your net worth is not something going horribly wrong. So listen to Michael Bloomberg talk about taxes and using taxes as a method of control. Because that's, you know, a flat tax makes absolute perfect sense. It's a flat rate. Everybody pays it, whether you make a dollar or you make $1 trillion. Everywhere in between, you pay this flat rate. That's it. But the tax code that we have is tens of thousands of pages long. People can't understand it. The people who write it can't understand it. The people who change it can't understand it. So you end up in a situation where they throw in all these little things where if you do this, you get to take this off. If you do that, you get a discount on this. If you don't do this, then you don't get this, and other people will get this deal. And they basically tell you, if you do what we want you to do, if you live your life how we think you should live your life, how we want and demand that you live your life, then you will be able to keep more of what you earn. Now, remember, the people dictating these terms haven't earned a damn thing of what you take home, of what you do. They weren't up there roofing with me when I was roofing. They weren't working at Best Buy when I was selling TVs. They weren't bussing tables when I was bussing tables. But they got to dictate and can dictate how everybody who earns money lives their lives and how much they get to keep of what they earn should they be a good dog and play ball. Now, this is something that Republicans and Democrats have done, using the tax code to incentivize this and disincentivize that, so on and so forth. But Michael Bloomberg gets a little bit more, they're never that explicit. They always say, oh, we're going to, just to use a popular example, something that I'll benefit from, the child tax credit. Well, you get the child tax credit. We want to encourage, they want to help people be able to afford to have children. Realistically, they want to encourage people to have children. So they keep on increasing the child tax credit, which is fine, well and good. There's an actual societal benefit from that because of what I just said, the replacement rate. But imagine that sort of management of the tax code on everything. Drinking, what you drink, what you eat, the food you buy, the clothes you wear. Once we get into the whole climate change mess and a madman like Michael Bloomberg or Tom Steyer up there saying we need to tax the hell out of X and encourage people to go buy Y, or we'll subsidize Y so people will buy that. When it comes to guns, they can't repeal the Second Amendment. So what they're doing now is taxing the hell out of firearms and ammunition. So, yes, nobody says you can't own a gun. You have, of course, a right to own a gun, but you have to pay a 500% sales tax on the purchase of that handgun. And by the way, bullets are now $100 a piece, but nobody's saying you can't buy them. Nobody's saying you can't have them. We're not restricting your use. We're not banning anything. This is how these people will go about getting control, through the tax code. That's why we need a simplified tax code, by the way. But listen to Michael Bloomberg, because politicians don't come out and say that sort of stuff. Michael Bloomberg did. Now, Michael Bloomberg said this in April of 2018, and if you think he's changed since then, you haven't been paying attention. But this is very telling about the idea, not only in Michael Bloomberg's head about how he's smarter than you are and knows how you should live your life and how poor people should live their lives, than it is anything else. Listen to Michael Bloomberg here.
Say, well, taxes are regressive, but in this case, yes, they are. That's the good thing about them, because the problem is in people that don't have a lot of money. And so higher taxes should have a bigger impact on their behavior and how they deal with themselves.
You hear that? They should have higher taxes on the poor will have a bigger impact in how they deal with them, how the choices that they make. We can control them through higher taxes. He's not done. He's not done. He's just beginning to lay this out. But I love that. Well, we need to, if we tax the hell out of the poor, then we can have a bigger impact on it. We raise taxes on everybody. Somebody like me won't even notice that you make a Coke at McDonald's go from $1 to $2. Who cares? It won't make any difference. I can pay for that out of loose change in my couch cushions and not even notice that the money is gone. But somebody making $25,000 a year, $30,000 a year, we can really screw them. We can force them not to make the choices that they want to make if we don't like those choices. That's what he's saying. That's what he continues to say.
So I listen to people saying, oh, we don't want to tax the poor. Well, we want the poor to live longer so that they can get an education and enjoy life. And that's what why you do want to do exactly what a lot of people say you don't want to do.
You hear that? See, you want to tax them because they might make the wrong decisions with their own money. That's what you don't want them to make their own wrong decisions in life. Now, I'm not sure who you want them to live longer so they can live long enough to get an education. I'm not sure how many 60, 70, 80-year-old poor people are going back to college to get degrees in computer programming. We're talking mostly about younger people here who are making that. There's a big misconception in life that, you know, it's all people are making these horrible decisions, and maybe they are. But by and large, the poor people are the younger people. As you increase in age, your income goes up, or it should if you're doing things right. And if you are inclined to improve your station in life, if you are on that trajectory, you definitely will increase your earnings as your age goes up. But Bloomberg is sitting there pretending that it's a completely different world, a completely different matrix in which he operates. Well, you got to prevent people from drinking large Cokes so that they live long enough to go and get an education? Really? Is Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola and all the other things, Faygo if you're from the Midwest, are those causing people to die at age 18, at age 25? No, they're not. But he doesn't know that, and he doesn't care. Michael Bloomberg doesn't smoke, he doesn't drink, he doesn't do anything. He might as well be Mormon. But he wants no part of any of this, but he wants you. He's not content with that. You know, most people are like, you know what, I don't do heroin. I don't want to do heroin. I'm not interested in heroin. Or a better example, Michigan yesterday was the first day, December 2nd, was the first day where recreational marijuana was legal. And people were lined up to buy marijuana. Literally, I've seen pictures on social media where people are lined up down the block, down the street to buy recreational marijuana. They're making their decisions. Now, you can sit there. A normal person would go, well, pot's legal now. I'm still not interested in it. Or maybe you go, you know what, pot's legal now. Maybe I'll give it a shot, see what all the fuss is all about. See what them hippies were all about back in the 60s. Whatever the case, most normal people look at it that way. The progressive mind doesn't look at it that way. The progressive mind looks at it as, I don't want to smoke it. I don't want to smoke weed. And I don't want anybody else to smoke weed. I don't want anybody else to make decisions that I disagree with, that I find problematic. That's the progressive mindset. Now, there are some conservatives, some social conservatives who have that based on various issues. But across the board, that is the progressive mindset. That's what Michael Bloomberg is saying right here. He doesn't want anybody to be able to buy large sodas because they're dangerous, they're bad. And if they want to buy them, he wants to tax the hell out of them because he knows better than you do what you should be consuming, what you should be able to consume. See, you can't be able to consume it because ultimately he wants a ban. Because if you're able to consume it, there will still be some people who make those poor decisions. They want to do a full-blown ban. It is about control. Bloomberg wasn't done. He's continuing to talk to, remember, this group of elites at the International Monetary Fund conference last year. It's a very receptive audience of economists.
The question is, do you want to pander to those people or do you want to get them to live longer? And there's just no question. If you raise taxes on full sugary drinks, for example, they will drink less. And there's just no question that full sugar drinks are one of the major contributors to obesity, and obesity is one of the major contributors to heart disease and cancer and a variety of other things.
See, you stupid poor people, you don't know what the hell you're doing. You're ruining your lives, you're killing yourselves, and you need somebody like me, Michael Bloomberg, billionaire, I own a mansion and a yacht, to come along and tell you how to live your life, how you should behave, what you should be doing. You're too stupid. If left to your own devices, you would make a whole series of bad decisions. But fear not. I, Michael Bloomberg, will ride in on a horse made of money to tell you how to live your life. Now, yes, there are a lot of things that are not good for us, especially in mass quantities, but they're actually pretty harmless if taken in small quantities, in small doses, everything in moderation. Michael Bloomberg is not that guy who says, oh, anything in moderation, just make sure you control it. He thinks everybody's too damn stupid to be able to go, you know what, I probably shouldn't drink this second 12-pack of full sugar Coca-Cola today. I should probably hold off. Maybe I should go for a walk around the block. That's what he believes. What's funny is the people I know who've consumed the most pop, as we call it, growing up, consumed the most pop, have actually very, very physically demanding jobs, and they burn through all of that. Their body's telling them, look, we need the energy. Plus, you know what's crazy, Mike, and what's crazy our liberal friends won't seem to understand is that sometimes people just like things that are bad for them. Potato chips really don't have any redeeming qualities, but potato chips taste all right. And if you're having a hamburger, which is also bad for you and bad for the planet, maybe you want to throw a handful of potato chips on the paper plate next to it, because you know what? They go well together. That sort of thing. And people, at the end of the day, after they've done their jobs, they just want to be left the hell alone to do whatever they want. If they want to go out and have a beer, guess what? That's bad for them. But so what? It's their choice. A lot of people live their lives by the motto that something's going to take you. You only get one shot at this thing, and you might as well enjoy yourself a little bit while you're doing it. They're not full-blown heroin addicts. They're not out robbing banks or raping people. No, they're, you know, working hard, doing their jobs, and at the end of the day, they want to blow off steam and relax any damn way they so choose, and they don't want some nanny to come along and tell them how to do it. It is incredibly arrogant. Everybody has looked at somebody else's life, some friend that they have, and said, God, he's such an idiot. He should do this, he should do that, do the other thing. And we've offered that advice to people. Now, either they follow it or they don't follow it. It doesn't matter. It's not your life. There comes a point when you go, all right, you keep screwing up. You keep making the same mistakes. You keep doing the same thing. You keep beating your head against that wall. I can't help you. I'm not going to try to help you. I can't help you anymore because your biggest problem is yourself. So I'm just going to back off and you do whatever the hell it is you do. And I'm going to, you know, just sit back and maybe we won't be friends. Maybe we will. It doesn't matter. But I'm not going to sit here and badger you about this anymore because you keep doing it. You know the right thing to do and you keep doing the wrong thing. And that's fine. It's your choice. Michael Bloomberg isn't that guy who just goes, oh, well, I tried. I did the best I could. I gave him the options. Because Michael Bloomberg is powerful enough when he was mayor of New York and is running for president, and he has $50 billion. If he's willing to spend $100 million on his bid to win the Democratic Party's nomination for president, he could spend another $100 million, and he could do that every year, and he'd be able to do that for the rest of his life and the rest of almost everybody else's life. He could spend that money on advertising saying, hey, don't drink sugary drinks or drink one per day. You're going to become obese. You're going to die. Educate people as much as they need to be educated. I don't think this is a surprise to anybody that, you know, Coke contains a lot of sugar. But you don't have to if you want to educate people, if it bothers you that much, let them do it. But you tell them exactly what the consequences are, and then you go about your business. Most people would be content with that, not Michael Bloomberg. He wants to ban it. That which he does not want to make mandatory, he wants to ban. That's the liberals' mantra. And they'll subsidize everything they want to make mandatory. And they'll make illegal and probably punishable by prison if you if they want to ban something. It is a screwed up way of looking at life, a screwed up way of being. It's based on arrogance. You can hear the arrogance in there. You want these people to do this. They don't know what's best for them. They're too stupid. So we're going to have to treat them like we're their parents. That is the progressive mindset from the turn of the 20th century, the belief that there were elites, people who were smarter than everybody, people that were better than everybody, who should be in charge and can and should determine how everybody else lives their lives, because everybody else is screwing it up. The elites sterilized people against their will. The progressives did in the beginning of the 20th century. They sterilized people against their will. They were in favor of murder. They created Planned Parenthood basically to eradicate black people from the population because they deemed people non-white to be inferior to them. And then in the white people crowd, they deemed most of them to be too stupid to be able to determine themselves. It was a group of Northeastern liberals who thought that they knew better for everybody, and they set about trying to implement policies that would give them control over people's lives because those people would just do stupid things if they were able to act freely. That mentality was in Teddy Roosevelt, it was in Woodrow Wilson. Now it lives almost exclusively in the Democratic Party. So kudos to Mike Bloomberg for actually running as a Democrat this time instead of a Republican, which is what he ran as in 2001 for mayor of New York. He only did that, by the way, because he was following Rudy and he wanted Rudy's endorsement and he got Rudy's endorsement. He was never really a Republican, as you can tell from this mentality. But this little diatribe, this little arrogant speech to a group of world elites continues.
So it's like saying, I don't want to stop using coal because coal miners will go out of work. Well, will lose their jobs. We have a lot of soldiers in the United States, in the U.S. Army, but we don't want to go start a war just to give them something to do. And that's exactly what you're saying when you say, well, let's keep coal killing people because we don't want coal miners to lose their jobs. The truth of the matter is there aren't very many coal miners left anyways, and we can find other things for them to do. But the comparison is a life or a job, or taxes or life. Which do you want to do? Take your poison.
Now, isn't that lovely? Look, yeah, we got to put coal miners out of work, but they can find something else. We can find something else for them to do. We'll give them make work. We'll have them move a pile of rocks from over there to over there. Whatever it is, government is taking care of it because they're too damn stupid. And all those people who like the electricity that coal generates, well, to hell with them. What do they know? Mike Bloomberg is on the case. He's smarter than you. He's better than you, and he knows everything. The arrogance of that. Now, Michael Bloomberg lives a life where nobody tells him no. Nobody's around Michael Bloomberg and tells him, hey, you know what? You're a bit of a douche and you need to pump the brakes on this thing because you're a bit power mad. You don't have a freaking clue what somebody living in Chicago working in a factory, what their life is like, what it, you know, what they want to do with themselves, what they know or don't know about what they're doing to themselves. You don't have a clue. How about you leave the people of Nebraska alone? You rule Mike's life, okay? You do that and leave everybody else alone. He doesn't hear that. And if he heard that, he wouldn't know what to do with it. He would probably freak out and fire the person who said it. And if they didn't work for him, he'd buy the company they worked for just so he could fire them. He's that kind of a power trippy guy. But the arrogance there is dripping. It's Michael Bloomberg here. But tell me you don't hear that in everything all the Democrats running for president say, everything they talk about, everything they push, that's what they're pushing. That's what they're selling. That's what motivates them behind the scenes. You don't know what's best for you. Someone has to make these decisions for you. You don't know what kind of health, you think you like your health insurance right now, but you don't know how bad you have it. You've got to surrender to the government, and the government will make things better for you. Now, he just wrapped up there, Michael Bloomberg. The next voice you're going to hear, I just want to play this to wrap it up, because you would think that maybe somebody at this group would say, now, we're talking a lot about control here, and people don't really want to be controlled. The concept of the United States of America is a country founded upon individual liberty. They're not super keen on control, government control, dictating what they can and can't do. No, you don't hear that. This is Christine Lagarde. She is the managing director of the International Monetary Fund. She is one of the world elites. She's probably always at Davos. She's up on stage at this IMF event, and she's having this conversation, listening to Michael Bloomberg. She's the one who asked the question that led to this. Listen to her response, and in acknowledgement of the audience sort of all going, yes, everybody here agrees with you, Mr. Bloomberg. There are some people who are just too damn stupid, and we have to take care of them.
So it's regressive. It is good. There are lots of tax experts in the room and fiscal experts, and I'm very pleased that they hear you say that. And they all say the two things in life which are absolutely certain. One is death. The other one is tax. So you use one to defer the other one.
That's correct.
Okay.
That is exactly right.
It.
Well said.
Yeah.
You said.
No, you said.
There you go. Taxes as a method of control of the masses, the great unwashed, you and me, who are just too stupid. We don't realize that we're destroying ourselves. Therefore, our betters, our moral and intellectual superiors, must gather together in some sort of world council to decide what we can and cannot do. They need to measure our beverage intake to make sure that it is not too high. They need to make sure that our red meat consumption, or meat of any kind, is not too high for the good of the planet and for the good of our health. Because we're too stupid to realize that if we just sat down and ate a complete tub of lard, that it might not bode so well for our future health prospects. We're just too stupid to figure that out for ourselves. Thank you, Michael Bloomberg. Thank you, Christine Lagarde. We bow down to your superiority. Now, I defy you to find anybody in the Democratic field who would disagree with that sentiment, who would do anything, say anything different, who believes anything different than what you just heard discussed there. You won't find it. They're all on board. It's all about control, varying degrees of control. Some are just more blatant about it. Bloomberg wasn't running for president last April when he's in 2018 when he said that. He might regret it now, but then again, he'll just buy $50 million more in ads to counter it, and all will be forgotten and forgiven in memory hold. If he becomes the Democratic Party nominee, they'll all pretend that mentality doesn't exist. Lastly today, excuse me, there was a Newsweek reporter named Jessica Kwong, K-W-O-N-G. She tweeted out on Thanksgiving this big post. She wrote a piece for Newsweek because she worked there. It says, how is Trump spending Thanksgiving? Tweeting, golfing, and more. Tweeting, golfing, and more. Basically just saying the president of the United States is screwing around on Thanksgiving. He's such a jerk. He's just having fun while the world burns. Well, turned out that the president went to Afghanistan on Thanksgiving, which is in direct contradiction to Kwong's piece, her news story. So she had to scramble. On social media, she deleted her tweet and said, quote, Trump headed to Afghanistan to surprise U.S. troops on Thanksgiving. Deleting this tweet because it was written before knowing about the president's surprise visit to Afghanistan. An honest mistake. Story has already been updated as shown in the screenshot. She changed her story. But she wrote her story before it happened. That's a bit of a problem because news is supposed to be about what happened, not what is going to happen. So the Washington Examiner has the story. The Newsweek reporter who wrote an inaccurate story about President Trump's Thanksgiving Day plans has been fired. The outlet's original story claimed the president only planned on tweeting and golfing during his holiday break, neglecting to mention his trip to Afghanistan. Newsweek's Jessica Kwong, whose Twitter handle identifies the political reporter as, quote, covering the Trump administration and family, initially published the article Thursday morning before the president's trip to Afghanistan was announced publicly. Quote, Newsweek investigated the failures that led to the publication of the inaccurate report that President Trump spent Thanksgiving tweeting and golfing rather than visiting troops in Afghanistan, a Newsweek representative told the Washington Examiner. The story has been corrected, and the journalist responsible has been terminated. We will continue to review our processes and, if required, take further action. Now, Jessica Kwong got fired, and I feel bad for Jessica Kwong. She deserved to be fired, if only because of laziness and unoriginality. If you didn't see that there was at least the possibility of a trip overseas on Thanksgiving, when they always did Thanksgiving or Christmas, you don't send your piece in until you know for sure the president is or isn't doing something, but there's nothing wrong with pre-writing it. If you don't know that, you probably shouldn't be working in journalism. But Newsweek published it. Newsweek ran with it. Newsweek had no problem. We're the editors who are being fired. Pre-writing a story is perfectly acceptable. You can pre-write the vast majority of a story and then fill in some blanks. You know, there's the next Democratic debate. You're going to know who the participants are, who the moderators are, what the setting is. You can write out a couple of paragraphs to give yourself a head start and then leave room for any fireworks or any notable moments that you just plug in later. But you got the basics down already, and there's nothing wrong with writing the basics a day before just to have them ready to go. The problem is you don't publish it until you know for sure that it actually went down that way. And she didn't publish it. The editors at Newsweek published this. While Jessica Kwong looked bad and probably lost a lot of whatever credibility she had left and should have at least been reassigned and maybe fired, the fact that Newsweek isn't firing whoever hit publish, whoever edited this thing, first thing Thanksgiving morning, just going, yep, well, there you go, checking this box, is a testament to how sucky Newsweek is, not Jessica Kwong. Anyway, that is it for today. We are out of time. My daughter is noticing Catboy. Ooh, it's Catboy. Yes, it is. I am not Catboy. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Thank you for listening and all that good stuff. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. You can enter to win Rich Lowry's signed book by emailing me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, @dailycaller.com. Otherwise, we'll be back normal with more news on Tuesday. Welcome to the week after Thanksgiving. I hope your Christmas tree's up. See you then.